Senator Pogemiller.
I move further proceedings on the roll call be dispensed with. The Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Pastor Keith Pearson from the First Evangelical Lutheran Church in Hector, Minnesota, and then remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Let us pray. Good and gracious God, source of all life, it is to you that we owe our very breath. You entrust us to be keepers of your good creation, stewards of your vast riches, advocates for the poor, the oppressed, and arbitrators between neighbors in their disputes. Guide our work today that we may honor your name. Give us wisdom in matters where a clear path is not certain. Give us patience in matters that tempt us to take shortcuts. Give us courage in matters that require quick action. Give us compassion in matters that affect human life and dignity. And give us humility in matters that touch our own lives. May the words of our mouths and our actions this day honor and glorify not ourselves but you, good and gracious God. And in your name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. To the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much. Good, nice message. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzel, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson Ropes, Fischbach, Phoebe, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olsen G, Olsen wow. M, Ortman, Pappas, Pariseau, Pogemiller, Pretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Vickerman, Wieger.
Quorum is present. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file 1142, signed Albin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Senator Murphy. Senator Murphy, do you have a motion to concur, Senator Murphy?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 1142 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
Okay, maybe tell the body some of the changes that were made, please.
Mr. President, members, this is the Federal Stimulus Act for transportation. Sorry, Mr. President, I'm on the wrong bill.
This is 11.
These are the amendments to the Welcome Home Vietnam Veterans Day. The date on the House file is correct. There was couple technical, and that's all it was just technical differences. We're taking the House language.
Discussion on the Murphy motion to concur and the amendments by the House to Senate File 1142 and the bill be placed on its repassage as amended. Discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Third reading.
Senate File 1142, a bill for an act relating to veterans, declaring June 13th, 2009, honoring all Vietnam-era Veterans Day.
Secretary will take the roll on the bill. All senators, having voted, desire to vote. Secretary, close the roll. There being 60 ayes and zero nays, the bill is passed. Its title agreed to. The next order of business will be reports of committees. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I move that the committee reports put in the agenda be now adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next order of business will be second reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of Senate bills. The next order of business is second reading of House bills. There's two printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of House bills. Next order of business is motions and resolutions. There are a number of authors' motions. Without objection, we will take them as one motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Dill, do you have a motion to make?
Mr. President, I move that Senate File Number 133, Number 13 on General Orders be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration.
Okay, what's the bill? And
this is a resolution to the U.S. Congress asking them not to pass any more regulations or laws regarding the transport of horses to slaughter.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next motion will be made by Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I move that Senate File 839 be withdrawn from the Committee on Business, Industry, and Jobs, given a second reading and placed on general orders.
Okay. You've discussed this. It's your bill.
Yes, we have. It's a Communities of a Lifetime bill and can come directly to the floor.
Okay. On the Sharon motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Papp. Second reading.
Senate File 839.
Second reading. Senator Pappas. Senator Pappas, you have a motion.
Mr. President, I move that Senate File 1370 be withdrawn from the Committee on Finances and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. This is a bill that has to do with the St. Paul Port Authority's tax-exempt bonds and more properly belongs in the Tax Committee.
Okay, on that Pappas motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Without objection, Resolution 63 and 64 will be... Without objection, they will be referred to the Rules Committee.
Senator Pogemiller introduces Senate Resolution Number 65, a Senate resolution adopting permanent rules of the Senate.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, it is my intent to take this up today, but after we pass the other bills. So I move to lay on the table.
Okay, on the motion to lay Resolution 65.
Mr. President.
Senator Senjum.
On that, maybe just a little discussion. From our caucus's perspective,
Wait a second here.
All right.
David, we're putting it on the table right now.
You can discuss it now, or he's laying it
Mr.
on
President,
the table.
Is that on the table right now?
Yeah. Well, that's the motion.
That's the motion.
And I think you get plenty of time later on, the way I understand it, to debate the resolution.
It's not so much, Mr. President, to debate the resolution. It's to it's for our caucus to have an opportunity to talk about them. And so the request would be, can we possibly do this Wednesday? Or alternatively, could we get about 15 minutes of a recess so that we can so we can have some opportunity to discuss them?
We'll talk, yep.
Okay.
I on the motion to lay it on the table. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Are we going to the... couple will be read at the...
Senators Pogemiller and Senjum introduce Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 7 relating to adjournment for more than 3 days.
Senator Pogemiller to adopt the resolution.
Mr. President, members, this is the resolution to allow us to adjourn for more than 3 days over the Easter Passover break.
Okay.
I'd move the resolution.
On the motion to move the resolution, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. There'll be one more to introduce at the desk.
Senator Pogemiller introduces Senate Resolution 66, a Senate resolution relating to postage, amending Senate Resolution Number 5.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I'd move to lay it on the table.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Urgent.
Senator Pogemiller, on the urgency.
Mr. President, I'd move that an urgency be declared within the meaning of Article 4, Section 19 of the Constitution of Minnesota with respect to House File 1797, and that the rules of the Senate be so far suspended as to give House File 1797, now on general orders, its third and reading, and place it on final passage. Members, this is the transportation stimulus bill and for the Federal Recovery Funds, and apparently contracts are going to be let later this week, so there is an urgency on this.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President, I yield to Senator Murphy.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think I'm on the right bill now here. So, yeah, this is the Federal Economic Recovery Act. Members, and the reason why there were some changes to the Senate bill, and we're going to take that House language. The House language is a stripped-down version of the federal stimulus package. In the Senate, the committee felt that we needed to put a couple things in play. One was disadvantaged business enterprises. The other one was American Disabilities Act language. We decided to take those out just because of the time delay here. MnDOT has already went out and put out for bids millions of dollars of projects in greater Minnesota. This money is going to go to pay those contracts that were put out on a request for bid. And we need the money by no later than Friday, and that was the reason why We decided to take those amendments off, expedite the situation, and get the money out as quickly as possible. But members, in transportation, we were given about $500 million of federal money to spread around on our construction projects all across the state. And currently, I believe MnDOT's doing a really good job of putting projects together that are shovel-ready. This will add quite a few people to our employment rolls here. And members, I would just ask for your support.
Discussion on the House File 1797.
And Mr. President, I do have a motion, the Rule 45 motion, to strike the Senate language and replace it with the House language.
Okay.
I would make that motion, Mr. President.
Wait. Mr. Secretary.
Senator Murphy moves that the amendment made to House File 1797 by the Committee on Rules and Administration in the report adopted March 30th pursuant to Rule 45 be stricken.
Hot. Did you, Senator Murphy, did you explain the House language in your explanation a little while ago? Okay, on the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Further discussion on the bill. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I just wanted to thank Senator Murphy for bringing this forward on a timely basis. And we do have his letter here, but I just wanted to have a verbal confirmation. We had those amendments in committee. Are we going to have a chance to come back and visit those and perhaps the finance bill or at some point in the future? Because they were good amendments that were supported unanimously by the committee.
Senator Murphy, did you want to answer? Senator Murphy.
Yes, Mr. President, just briefly. Senator Dibble, that is correct. MnDOT actually was going to go ahead and do what we had asked them in committee. As a matter of fact, they've set up a process before we even put the amendments on the bill to take care of that. And they said, if you want to put those in a bill later on, we've got no problem complying.
Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I wondered if Senator Murphy will yield.
He will yield. Senator Scheid.
Mr. President and Senator Murphy, I just don't know if this is the bill that we had discussed early on. I had a bill having to do with some bonding for Highway 610, and we were there. We talked about $5 million, and then we talked about somewhere between $7 to $9 million. Is that something that this bill covers, and is that language in the bill?
Senator Murphy.
Mr. President and Senator Scheid, the 610, part of the 610 project, not the complete rectification of that corridor, but part of that 610 project is going to be funded through federal stimulus money. The language is not in this bill. All this bill does is move the spending authority up for MnDOT to account for the $503 million. They have a project list out there for both Greater Minnesota and the metropolitan area. The metropolitan projects haven't went out the door yet. They have a couple other levels of checkoff that it has to go through. But it's my understanding that the 610 project half of that's going to be completed with the federal money.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. President and Senator Murphy, I understand about the larger project, and I know it's only completing kind of the eastern portion of what remains to be finished there, but I'm talking about some supplementary money that had to do with getting ready for that second half and also some interchange language. Is that another bill?
Senator Murphy.
Mr. President and Senator Scheid, we'll have our appropriations bill up here in a couple weeks, and you'll find language in there related to a lot of different things. We normally don't in our bill identify projects per se, but what we do is try to set up funds of money. MnDOT has been very good at making sure that the pots of money are used for what we establish them for. And members, this Highway 610 project has been something that's been going on for years and years and years. There's about 5 miles that need to be rectified, actually built. Most of the property has already been acquired. Senator Limmer is telling me it's all been acquired now. And it's been sitting there waiting for dollars, a very expensive project, but it's going to help that northwest corner of the metropolitan area out in ways that are, would be a good expenditure of money. It's just that when you have projects that are $50, $100, $150 million, it's pretty hard to get all that money together at one time. MnDOT plays under a rule that says that unless they have all the money for the project encumbered, they can't let the bid out. And, that just makes sense. But when you have a project that is expensive as the Highway 610 project or the Unweave the Weave that just got done, it does take a while to get all that money together. So we're just asking for a little bit of patience here. MnDOT, it's high on their priority list. They know that there's some even more federal money involved if we pony up I think it's $5 or $8 million. We would be able to leverage more federal money. MnDOT's aware of that, and they're going to get it taken care of.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Sarah Murphy, just to bring verification to this discussion, I talked with officials of the city of Maple Grove. They have gone forward and acquired the remaining tracts of land for specifically Highway 610. They did this they're rather confident that they're going to get somewhere this year. And so they've decided to go forward and buy up the remaining parcels of land. That land has already, at least the purchase agreements have been signed. I'm not sure if the closing has, but the wheels are in motion. So that way, at least for those members on your committee and transportation committee, they can be assured that all of the land is now acquired. And this funding package, stimulus money from Washington, will not get us the full 5 miles, but it'll get us a significant way there. It'll start flowing some traffic through Senator Scheid's district and all the way over to where I think Lionel Lakes is where 610 kind of ends up. And so we look forward to having a dust fly this coming fall and next spring. So we're looking forward to that. We just wanted to make sure, and we'll have to have a discussion later on after the passage of this to see where we're going in the next few pieces of legislation this year of where we can go forward on. Thank you.
Further discussion on the bill. Secretary will give House File 1797 its third reading.
House File 1797, a bill for an act relating to transportation, providing for a receipt and appropriation of federal economic recovery funds.
Secretary will take the roll.
Ann?
All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes, 0 nays, bill is passed. It's title agreed to. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I'd like to designate two other bills that have that relate to federal stimulus and the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. I'd like to designate Senate File 1197, related to unemployment insurance, and I'd like to designate Senate File 1329, related to public facilities authority, and yield to Senator Tomassoni.
Senate File 1197, Senator Tomassoni.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, Senate File 1197 is a federal conformity bill, and it's directly related to unemployment insurance and the federal stimulus funds and the modifications that we needed to make to state law in order to receive these funds. Members, the amount of money involved here is about $130 million, and it'll be directly deposited into the Minnesota Unemployment Insurance Fund. The amount of money that we'll be receiving will generate about $100,000 of interest a week, and so the quicker we get it into the fund, the better off we are. This is necessary to do in order for us to get this money, but also because of the fact that there are so many people that are receiving unemployment right now, it behooves us to take this money, because our unemployment fund is to the point where it will eventually be tapped out in the very near future, probably around the end of this year. We will obviously then automatically go to federal borrowing, but with this amount of money, it takes a little bit longer to do so. There are some other clauses in the bill that relate to unemployment and eligibility, but the gist of the bill and the guts of the bill are making sure that we conform to the federal law and that we receive the money as quickly as possible. So I'd appreciate your support.
Further discussion on Senate File 1197. Seeing none, the Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 1197, a bill for an act relating to unemployment insurance, conforming Minnesota law to the requirements necessary to receive federal stimulus funds, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes, 1 nay. The bill is passed. It's title agreed to.
Mr. President, I yield to Senator Frederickson for special order, Senate File 1329.
Senate File 1329, Senator Frederickson.
Mr. President, Senate File 1329 will make some changes to our laws to allow us to spend money from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, or the stimulus bill that is commonly referred to. I have distributed to your desk a one-sheet information page from the Minnesota Public Facilities Authority that explains a little bit about what this bill needs to do. First of all, we expect to receive about $107 million from the federal government for clean water and clean drinking water. 50% of those funds need to be spent in the as grants or loan forgiveness. A minimum of 20% of the funds need to be used to address green infrastructure, energy, and water efficiency improvements or other environmentally innovative activities. All the projects must comply with the Davis-Bacon federal wage law. There's also a Buy American provision in the federal law for iron, steel, and manufactured goods. another key element is 50% of these funds need to be under contract 120 days after the federal bill was signed, which was February 17th. So by June 17th, half of these funds have to be obligated under contract, and all of them need to be obligated within 1 year of February 17th of this year. The projects must be listed on the intended use plan that's assembled for clean water by Pollution Control Agency and by the Department of Public Health for the clean drinking water. And the funds will be awarded to eligible projects in the order that they are certified by PCA and submitted as bid cost to the Public Facilities Authority. Mr. President, members, that's a brief description of what the bill does. I will try to quickly go through the sections of the bill now. Section 1 makes changes to the Clean Water Revolving Fund. There are a couple changes in that section of existing law. Under current law, we cannot do loans for longer than 20 years. This bill will change to conform with federal law so that it conforms with those under the Federal Water Pollution Control Act. And that provides that in communities with limited resources or lower income communities, that the loans be for 30 years and that the community receive help in the form of grants for costs that exceed 1.4% of the median household income. Section 2 makes the same changes to our law in the Drinking Water Revolving Fund, identical same changes. Section 3 makes some changes for the Clean Water Program. And in the Clean Water Program, we'll be receiving $82,564,000. And that money is going to be credited to the Clean Water Revolving Fund. There are grants required under this law. I want to talk about both of the requirements under Subdivision 2. First of all, 50% of the grants need to be made under provisions on Subdivision 4, and also for eligible projects, up to 65% of the eligible grant is identified by the United States Department of Agriculture, Economic, and Community Development Program. And those grants under Subdivision 4 are, first of all, that they must be based on an as-bid cost and the order funded in the order the projects are received by PCA. They must provide for a base grant of 20% up to a maximum of $2 million. And for those lower-income communities where the construction, debt service, maintenance, and operation of the project will exceed 1.4% of the median household income. 80% of that difference has to be provided in the form of a grant to that community. And that's up to a maximum of $15,000 per connection, or a maximum of $4 million in the total project. Going back up to Subdivision 3 in this section requires that not less than 20% of the money be used for green infrastructure projects if there are enough eligible projects to arrive at a minimum of 20%. And of that 20% of those projects that qualify, 25% of those projects must be in the form of a grant to a maximum of $2 million per project. Section 4 does the same changes as Section 3, except it's for the drinking water monies, and that amount of money for drinking water is $24,577,000, and of course that intended use plan is assembled by the Department of Health. And the last paragraph E provides that for those communities, our public water systems that do not meet the national primary drinking water standards would be eligible for a 50% grant for a maximum of $10,000, and the total amount of grants for this program is $250,000. and this bill is effective the day after enactment. So, Mr. President, I've gone fairly quickly through the bill. I will stand for questions if there are questions.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 1329? Seeing none, the Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 1329, a bill for an act relating to public facilities authority providing for use of federal funds allocated to the state by the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act.
Secretary will take the roll on the bill. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary, close the roll. There being 64 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed. It's still agreed to.
Mr. President, as long as we have everybody in the room, under motions and resolutions, I move we take up the Senate calendar.
Okay, on the motion to take up the calendar, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Again, just a reminder, there's 2-4... five, and with the consent calendar, there will be 6 votes taken. I would suggest you stay seated. They should move fairly quickly. The first bill on the calendar, number 2, Senate File number 33. This is an old scene bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 33, a bill for an act relating to pupil transportation, modifying qualifications for Type 3 school bus drivers.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted to desire to vote, Secretary, close the roll. There being 64 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed. Title agreed on. The next bill, number 3 on the calendar, Senate File 708. This is a FOBI bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 708, a bill for an act relating to mortgages, modifying provisions relating to foreclosure consultants.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 60 ayes, 4 nays. Bill is passed. The title agreed to. The next bill, the author has requested progress on. Progress requested, progress granted. Number 6 on the calendar, Senate File 284. This is Senator Higgins' bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 284, a bill for an act relating to elections applying certain privileges to major political party caucuses held in cities of the first class during odd-numbered years.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators have been voted. Desire to vote. Secretary, close the roll. There be 65 ayes, 0 nays. The bill is passed and it's still agreed to. The last bill on the Senate calendar, number 7, Senate File 164. This is Senator Rest bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 164, a bill for enactment relating to adoption requiring affidavit regarding disclosure of birth records.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary. We'll close the roll. There'll be at 62 ayes, 3 nays. The bill is passed. It's title agreed to. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, remaining on motions, I move that we take up the Senate consent calendar.
On the motion to take up the consent calendar, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The only bill on the consent calendar this afternoon is Senate File 675, Senator Kubley. And, explain the bill, Senator.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President and members. Senate File 675 comes from the Emergency Medical Services Board. I've been a member of that board for nearly 7 years now, but this simply makes one small change from some changes that were made last year that would allow a first responder to serve as the driver of an ambulance that exists in a rural community. And Senator Coring actually carried a bill that was nearly identical to this one for the Ambulance Association. But the Ambulance Association and the Medical Board, generally do, take ideas from one another, so that's not uncommon. But the only change that's listed here is that it allows communities that exist outside the metropolitan area that have a small piece of the metropolitan area included in their service area are allowed also to have a first responder as the driver on a basic life support ambulance when it goes out. So while before it pertained only to those that had their service territory exclusively in a rural area, this one allows those who have their service area primarily in a rural area. And the word primarily is the only change in statute that allows a few services that have a sliver of the metropolitan area in their service area that allows them to be included where they had not been included in past legislation. Appreciate your support, members.
Further discussion on Senate File 675. The Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 675, a bill for an act relating to health, making technical changes for emergency medical services.
Secretary will take the roll. Secretary will close the roll. There'll be 65 ayes, 0 nays. The bill is passed. It's title agreed to. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, members, it is my intent to take up the permanent rules today, and so I would, Senator Senjum has asked for a brief recess. So I'd move the Senate at recess for about 10 minutes, And then we'll come back and take up Senate Resolution number 65. The majority will be in the retiring room.
Senator Sedgill.
How about the, Mr. President, would the sergeant know whether 107 or 112 would be open? Mr. President, 112, Senate Republicans.
Okay. Senate Republicans in room 112. On the motion for a brief recess, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senate stands in recess.
The roll call be dispensed with and Sergeant Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Without objection, we'll go to the addendum for today. The first order will be reports of committees. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I move the committee reports printed in the addendum be adopted with the exception of the reports pertaining to appointments.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I move that the committee reports pertaining to appointments be laid on the table.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. On the addendum, printed on the addendum, second reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's addendum. Without objection, second reading of Senate bills. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I move that Senate Resolution number 65 be taken from the table.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogermiller.
Do I make a motion to adopt them first and then debate it?
Mr. President, I move that Senate Resolution number 65 relating to permit rules be adopted.
Discussion on the motion.
Mr. President, members, Senate Resolution number 65 is the permanent rules of the Senate. There are several changes made in the rules. We've been discussing in the Rules Committee for a month or so. The first is a change to Rule 7, and it removes what's proven to be an unworkable and inefficient language and provides for language that is simpler to implement, fiscally responsible, transparent, and flexible. Rule 8.2 is a kind of a paper cleanup thing. It says that a confirmation that is withdrawn after 60 legislative days if a term has expired or an appointee is no longer serving. 12.3 is amended that a bill cannot be considered in a committee on the day of introduction unless two-thirds of the committee votes to take the bill up. Rule 18.1 moves introduction and first reading of bills to the eighth order of business. Members know that we typically skip over various orders of business to take the introductions, and this just moves it up quicker in the agenda. Rule 41.1 requires that, or makes clear, clarifies, because it's currently required, but clarifies that a vote on a roll call in the Committee of the Whole members should be voting. Keep in mind that when you are in Committee of the Whole, though, you cannot put a call of the Senate on, so you ultimately can't make somebody vote, but you can. You certainly can request that everybody vote. Rule 53.1 puts the Senate budget, gets it posted on the web, a summary of the Senate budget posted on the web. Mr. President, I would stand for questions.
Mr. President.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm wondering, I may have missed it, but the changes to Rule 7, could you talk a little bit more in detail about what you're doing with Rule 7?
Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, yes. Senator Hamm, this is on page 3, 4, and 5, and a little bit of page 6. And I think we've all learned over the years that the way that budget resolution language was set up that it either was kind of unworkable and ignored because we proceeded to do budget targets prior to the timetables in the rule, or if we did proceed with the rule and did a budget resolution, it was so general in nature that you could present a resolution adopted on the floor that didn't reveal the information that people really wanted and needed. So what this does is it streamlines the situation, makes it more workable, and puts it in a form which actually reflects how we present the budget in the legislature. And on lines 417 through 419, it says at least 15 days before a deadline for divisions of the Committee of Finance to act on omnibus bills, targets for the general fund budget must be publicly announced. That this year we announced them prior to that 15-day period, because I think that day is a couple days after Easter sometime. So we actually did that much quicker this year than this rule would allow, and that would be the way I would like to function. But this protects against hiding those targets, so everybody would know what the proposed targets and the divisions are. And then the Finance Committee would do its work. Presumably it would follow those targets. If the Finance Committee chose to change those targets, they would do that by voting in the committee, and then the bills would come to the floor, and that ultimately sets the targets, the bills as they come to the floor. And then what this rule says is that to be fiscally responsible, only amendments that balance within those bills would be in order on the floor. You certainly could allow an amendment that raised more revenue than the bills, because that would not put us out of balance and not spend it. You could certainly offer an amendment that cut the budget deeper and left money on the bottom line. That would be allowed. But what you could not do is offer an amendment that said, I want to spend money here, but I don't want to pay for it. And so what the language on lines 524 through 6.2 says is that only amendments that balance within that bill either raise the revenue or cut the budget somewhere else to put something to spend it somewhere else would be allowed or be in order. And it seems to me that's kind of the fiscally responsible and transparent way to do the work.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hand.
The provision that talks about the public announcement, how is that to be understood? Who makes the public announcement, and in what form does that take place?
Mr. President, Senator Hand, this was discussed in the Rules Committee, and it is intentionally vague. Presumably, it's the majority that announces the targets that they intend to bring out of their committee. And in that case, it's historically been the majority leader and the tax and finance chairs. But since we have, you know, a decentralized collaborative model here, it could be announced by the finance and tax chairs separately. Senator Senjum also made the point that the minority could announce some budget targets, and that absolutely would be in order. And then the way to effectuate those budget targets would be in the finance and tax committees before the bills come to the floor. So it's intentionally vague. While I'm majority leader, my intent would be to do as we have the last 2 years, which is to put out the targets for both taxes and finance in a public way so that everybody's able to work on that in the committees.
Senator Hand.
Thank you. I'm trying to... It seems like our current rule as it's written requires that the Senate as a body talk about and debate and adopt these targets before they become announced, I guess. So would this contemplate then a process whereby the majority could select targets and announce them without any consultation, knowledge, or awareness by the minority?
Senator Porkemiller.
Mr. President, Senator Hahn, that would not be the working practice that I would be interested in, because we're looking for bipartisan work in the committees. But theoretically, yes, they could. But as you know, the reality is that people work in the committees and try to get the work done together, and I presume that that would be the practice. What we have learned from the language in the current rule is that it has provided no assurance for bipartisan work, and what we're really trying to do is get a rule here that works, that effectuates kind of a collaborative process in the Senate, and by making sure that the targets by whoever wants to announce them are done earlier rather than later, I think that will effectuate more bipartisan, transparent work.
Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, I guess just the current rules that we have, and I think, Senator Pogemiller, you had mentioned this, we have not been following those rules, at least to my recollection. Are the proposals that you're making, are they being made because we haven't been following the rules that we have, or is it thought that these would be more workable? I guess I'm not clear. Some of us have gotten kind of cynical, frankly, about the rules and saying, well, we got them, but we don't follow them, so what difference does it make? What is the intent of the thinking here, to put something in place that the majority expects to live by, or is it just to do a change, or can you talk a little bit about that?
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Senator Hand, what we're trying to do here is, I think it's been real clear to members over the years that this budget resolution process has not worked. There have been resolutions on the floor that have been done in a way that it's hard to understand exactly what's going on, because you set the numbers in such a gross manner that you really can't tell what's going on. There's been no requirement to actually put out the budget target. The resolution never required that you put out the individual targets for the individual divisions of the Finance Committee. So I think that's a massive improvement over the current rule. And I think this actually moves the time frame, depending on what year you're in, this actually could move the time frame up. And so the intent here is to put in place a workable rule that's more efficient, simpler, easier to implement, and actually gets the kind of information out that members of the Senate want. And I think what members of the Senate want is, what number are the Finance Committee division chairs working under? What are they trying to accomplish? And then, do you need revenue in the tax bill to accomplish a balanced budget based on the numbers in the Finance Committee? And so I think what this rule would do is be simpler to implement. It would be more open, and it would be more straightforward, so that members would have an opportunity earlier in the process to actually become involved in the details of the budgeting.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, would the majority leader yield?
He will yield, Senator Senjum.
Senator Pogemiller, I have read the proposed amendment regarding the 15 days probably 20 times in the last couple of days, and I keep coming back to this question, and that basically is, what assurance would we or the general public have at all relative to the deadline not being, frankly, in a certain year, given certain circumstances, very close to the end of session? It just seems to me that this language is so arbitrary that it is completely up to the majority to declare their deadline, and then subsequently their targets, and that declaration could be very, very late in the session, which I don't think serves either the public well or certainly the body very well. So my question is, what drives this date, and is there anything certain other than simply the wishes of the majority?
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Senator Senjum, the way this works is that, recall that we pass a concurrent resolution with the House setting deadlines for policy and budget bills, and that's what sets this in motion, because there's a deadline set, and then at least 15 days before that deadline for the budget bills, you have to have targets public so that people know what you're shooting for in your bills. And as you know, since I've been majority leader and the current speaker has been speaker, we've been moving those targets earlier and earlier every year so that we can actually get the work done quicker, so that we have less of a logjam at the end of session. And this year that target is, I believe, the Wednesday or Thursday after the Easter Passover break, and that 15 days has not even come yet. But, as you know, targets have been put out. As a matter of fact, the Senate put its targets out earlier than anybody this year. And I, as long as I'm majority leader, that would be my intent, if we could, because I think that creates a more open process. But the backstop here is the budget concurrent resolution that the House and Senate pass on deadlines.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. President and Mr. Majority Leader, is there, and I probably should know this, is there a requirement in the rules that there be deadlines established, or is that simply custom and practice?
Mr. President, Senator Senjum, I think it's custom and practice because the House and the Senate need to figure a way to get their work done. I don't know. I think the only thing that the legislature really has to do is get its bills to the governor before the... I guess we don't even have to do that. We could choose not to pass a budget. But I think the history of this is the House and the Senate set committee targets. I mean, committee deadlines. Senate has targets. The House has targets. When they get to conference committee, we jointly then set targets to get the conference committees completed and then get the bills to the governor.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, with certainly all due respect, I understand what the tradition is and practice has been in the last couple of years, and it's been good. I think Senator Pogemiller has moved things up very well. But these rules are probably going to outlast, I'll tell you what, they'll outlast me. I'm not sure if they'll outlast Senator Pogemiller, but they'll outlast me. And time will come, and time will go, and others will come, and yet these rules will be before us. And we don't know on into the future how people are going to react to these. And so, again, if you're in a minority, these are looked at least by myself, I think, with a certain amount of concern and fear that we have, frankly, no control over the setting of deadlines at all. It's not provided for in any other rule, and as such, we're simply at the mercy of the majority to make those decisions. Mr. President, I would offer, if I could, the A-17 amendment.
Secretary will report the Senjum A-17 amendment.
Senator Senjum moves to amend Senate Resolution Number 65 as follows. Page 4, delete lines 17 to 19 and insert. This is Amendment A-17.
Senator Senjum, on your amendment.
Mr. President, members, actually this is an amendment that was offered perhaps the first or second day of session. It calls for moving up this process and, frankly, moving it up considerably. It is aimed at the targets being set 14 days after what we might call the February forecast, and that those targets then would be the targets for the rest of the session and would carry us, again, through the session and through the resolution of the budget for that year. Mr. President, I think, and especially at a year like this, when we're facing, frankly, a huge budget deficit, the setting of targets early, I think, allows for the process to go forward. We know what the governor's budget is. The Senate budget comes out, frankly, in this case of this year, perhaps 3 weeks later. We're able then to work with everybody's cards on the table, and we're able to work then through the majority of the session with the numbers, and hopefully then coming in the end to a strong and a good resolution. But Mr. President, I think in particular times like this, it's important to have these numbers out early. This amendment does that. Within 14 days after the February forecast, targets shall be established, and the process would move forward. Thank you.
Discussion is on the A-17 amendment. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, just very briefly, I think we were just trying to calculate. I think this would be March 17th this year because we had a March 3rd forecast. And I think we actually put our targets out a little before that this year. I think what's important, though, is depending, you got to give enough time between the forecast for the committees to do their work so you can set intelligent numbers. And this year we did that as quickly as we could, and I think we were about March 17th, roughly. March 12th, apparently, is the day we put our targets out. So I think I prefer the flexibility that's in the rule now. And Senator Senjum, as you know, my preference is to get those numbers out as quickly as possible. So I would oppose the amendment.
We're on the A-17 Senjum amendment. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, the words of the majority leader have confirmed my thoughts, and that is this process could work. Did this year. The targets were out early. We appreciate that. I think it's a good amendment. Mr. President, I'd ask for a roll call.
Be a roll call. Secretary will take the roll on the Senjum A-17 amendment. Senate is under call.
Mr. President,
we're in the middle of a roll call, but I've been informed that we are not under call.
Yeah, I don't believe we are. But
yeah, the light was on, and I was mistaken. All senators having voted desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 21 ayes, 43 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to introduce the A-22 amendment.
Secretary will report the A-22 amendment. Does this have Senator Senjum's name on the top?
Yes, it does, Mr. President.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Limmer moves to amend Senate Resolution 65 as follows. Page 8, line 12. This is Amendment A-22.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, you may all agree with me that transparency and public notice is vital to running any Democratic association or administration, including the legislature. We have a current rule that we try to recognize 3 formal days to the extent practicable that we give notice to the public regarding bills that will be heard by committee. And so far, I've begun to realize that we're beginning to slip on that. That instead of using a looser definition of the extent practicable, that we would require 3 days. 3 days is important for the public to know what we are going to do either for them or to them. And I believe that 3 days is a common notice in other legislators as well. The bill before you would strike the word to the extent practicable, and that it would recognize 3 days notice except for the last 14 days prior to the end of the session year. I'll stand for questions.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, Senator Limmer, certainly understand the intent of where you're headed. I think what we've found over the years, though, that you really need to have to the extent practical, to allow a flow around deadline time and so forth. And I think that's where the real crunch comes for most of these bills, is around the committee deadline time. And human beings, as they are, don't always move as quickly as they always should until there's a decision to be made. So there's always this constant encouragement to try to be as open as you can about your committee hearings, and I think people are doing pretty well on that. And we are making this change to say that you can't hear a bill on the same day it's introduced unless a real strong majority of the committee is for that. So I would hesitantly oppose your amendment.
Apparently this didn't come up on a computer. We have a... Okay, it's going to be on your computer in just a minute. If you need a paper copy, there are some available. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. And thank you, Mr. Majority Leader. It's been my experience as I've gone to some of my committee hearings, though, that some of the agendas aren't printed until the night before, and that's becoming more and more a common practice in our Senate body when it comes to committee agendas. We won't know until the night before, even after business hours, let's say 5, 6 o'clock, and then we finally get the notice that a particular bill is coming up. Now, I have difficulty in preparing for that, but I can only imagine what the public at large would have the difficulty, especially if they had to travel from a long distance into St. Paul in order to give us advice as afforded their own rights of affecting, influencing the legislature in the form of a committee. We all know that the committees are uniquely an American institution in government, that we allow citizens to come and try and influence government by either stating to us personally whether they like or whether they're opposed to some of the ideas that we have. That's why a three-day notice is vitally important for the running of this particular government. We disagree, perhaps the desire to have a well-run government, you could make a good argument that could trump giving notice. I don't believe it should be a good reason for that. So, Mr. President, I ask for a roll call vote.
So you're a roll call on Limmer A22 amendment. Any further discussion? Secretary will take the roll. Dahl. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll or be in. 21 ayes, 41 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion? Senator Vandiver.
Mr. President, I have the A28 amendment.
Secretary will report the Vandiver A28 amendment. This has Senator Senjum's name on it.
Senator Vandiver moves to amend Senate Resolution Number 65 as follows. Page 23 after line 22, insert. This is Amendment A28.
Senator Vandiver.
Mr. President, members, the A28 amendment prohibits the payment of per diem during the interim or after adjournment of the legislature sine die unless the senator is attending meetings, Senate committee, subcommittee, or division hearings, or task force hearings on commissions or any of these committees that you are a member. And I would request a roll call on this amendment.
Discussion on the amendment.
Mr. President.
Senator Porgemiller.
I would oppose the amendment.
Secretary will take the roll on the amendment. All senators having voted, desired vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 28 ayes, 35 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Before we go any further, I wish to impose a call of the Senate.
Senate's under call. Senator Limmer.
Mr. President, that would be for the remaining time for the discussion of this resolution.
Okay.
And, Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and that the sergeant at arms be instructed to bring in absent members.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. This is for the duration of this bill. Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A20 amendment. It's listed under Senjum.
Secretary will report the A20. Gerlach / Senjum's name is on it. Gerlach amendment. Senator Gerlach.
Senator Gerlach moves to amend Senate Resolution Number 65 as follows, page 20, line 20. This is amendment A20.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Gerlach.
And members, before I forget, I would like to request a roll call vote on this, Mr. President.
Let me roll call. Senator Gerlach.
Thank you. Members, Rule 46 is regarding the appointment of conference committees. Talks about the subcommittee on committees here and the appointment thereof. And I have a very simple one-sentence amendment here, actually two, but the gist of it is this. Notwithstanding any provisions of Rule 46.2, at least one member of each conference committee must be selected by the leader of the minority group. What that means is that when we appoint these conference committees, we have truly bipartisan conference committees. And members, I think that's critically important. In fact, just minutes ago, in an exchange between Senator Hand and Senator Pogemiller made the statement, he says, we're looking for bipartisan work in the committees. And I wrote that down because that just struck a chord. And I think that we're not just referring to our standing committees, but I think we're referring to all committees. And it's important that we make sure that we have bipartisan participation of the minority as well as the majority on these conference committees. So, members, I would appreciate your support on this amendment.
Mr. President.
Discussion is on the A20 Gerlach Amendment. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I absolutely, and I'm glad Senator Gerlach noticed that I have been promoting the bipartisanship here. And we absolutely would like that, and I think almost all conference committees do have both minority and majority members on them. I think the only instance where they don't is where there's not a minority member that voted for the bill. And even in those instances, we put a minority member on. And I don't support this rule, though, because unlike the other body, no one person has the power to put somebody on a conference committee. I don't have that power. It's a committee that does that. And we have a committee that the majority leader and the minority leader both serve on, and we try to kind of in a collaborative way place people on the committees that make sense. And so I don't think we should give one member the power. Majority members, I don't believe we should give one member the power to appoint conference committees like in the other body. Unless, of course, the body wants to break from tradition and allow the majority leader to appoint conference committees. But I'm guessing that that's not what the members want to do, and so I think we ought to stick with a process that works. I noticed Senator Bach was noticing. I think we ought to keep with current Senate tradition and have a committee do it.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted desire to vote. Secretary will. Close the roll. There be 23 ayes, 41 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on the.
Mr. President.
Resolution. Senator Hand.
I have the A16 amendment.
Secretary will report the Han A16 amendment.
Senator Han moves to amend Senate Resolution Number 65 as follows. Page 23 after line 22, insert. This is amendment A16.
Senator Han.
Thank you, Mr. President. And members, this has to do with section of the rules, Rule 53, that deal with budget and expenditures. And I think for a variety of reasons, I think part of it might be related to a bipartisan spirit in this House. We should do some things to change how we deal with our budget. And my amendment is very simple. It just says that the total amount of the operating budget that the Senate has to be divided between the majority and the minority caucuses proportionately. And then each caucus would contribute back again to the expenses of conducting the nonpartisan operation of the Senate. And members, the reason for this is I think there's a fairness issue here about whether the minority has the right to govern itself in terms of how it uses its budget and for what purposes. And I think the majority party clearly has the votes. They can set the total amount of the budget. They can set some total, if they want to reduce the budget, if they want to increase it, they have the power to do that. But I think it is a question of fairness to say that our minority group should have the power to make decisions within our caucus about what suits our caucus in terms of how we're going to manage that budget. And we can be held accountable. There's a change in the rule that says these things have to be put on the Senate web. I think that's a very good idea. We should have done this long ago. We should have this budget be available to the public, and it should be transparent. But I think right now, there have been some instances that we could point to where the current structure is not very workable. And some of us may believe that that has led to some abuses, maybe not intentional, but clearly some situations where members of the minority have felt that our rights as a minority, our rights as citizens, are not being well served. And so, members, this doesn't do anything about changing the amount of the budget. It just talks about who gets to govern the spending of it, who gets to govern the allocation of it, and whether, as a minority caucus, we should have the same discretion that the majority does in determining how that is to be done. And so I don't know why anyone would object to this, frankly, and I would be interested to hear any objection to this. So I, Mr. President, would expect a unanimous roll call vote on my amendment. Thank you.
Be a roll call. Senator Pogermiller. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I would oppose the amendment, and I actually think this amendment would lead to more partisanship because what if one of the groups decided not to fund the nonpartisan research staff? I think that would be a bad idea.
Mr. President.
Further discussion. Senator Hand.
Well, Mr. President and Senator Pogermiller, I think my amendment doesn't anticipate that one group would not fund. It says each group providing a portion of its allocation to meet the expense. That clearly anticipates that both caucuses would proportionately fund the nonpartisan staff. And if there was some clarifying language that the majority would like to put in here to make that more clear, I'm certainly open to do that. This is not the point of this is not to say that we don't want to pay or we don't want to contribute to the funding of the nonpartisan staff. All we're saying is that as a matter of basic fairness, the majority party gets to structure how it's going to operate, how it's going to structure its staff and its caucus. It has every power to do that. It can decide how many positions, can decide what their definitions are, can decide what their pay is going to be within the constraint of the overall budget. And we as a minority party have none of those rights. And that's not right. That's not right. And it's not fair. And that's the purpose of this amendment, is to give the minority the same rights and the same abilities to manage the budget and its staff as the majority has. And again, I don't know why anyone would oppose this. It has nothing to do with the total amount of money being spent. It has nothing at all to do with changing the procedures and how people are hired or managed. It simply has to do with who gets to decide how the budget is going to be structured, and the minority should be accorded the same rights that the majority has and how this is done.
Senator Murphy, then we're going to vote on this amendment.
Oh, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President and members, with just a couple word changes here, Senator Hand, I would support your amendment, but one of them would have to be so that it was proportionate for all the nonpartisan and partisan staff, because, you know, when you're talking about fairness, Senator Hand, you guys had 32 people in your caucus before the last election. Now you got 21, but you're still staffed at having 32.
Mr. President.
Senator Sedgill.
Mr. President, that is not the case. I can assure Senator Murphy it's not the case at all. We are proportional, and we understand that. May I speak to the amendment?
We're on the Hand A-16 amendment, that the allocation amendment.
Mr. President, I stand in support of this amendment. I think it's a good amendment, and maybe especially good given the circumstances that we're under. And that is a hiring freeze. Should any of our employees leave and leave a gap, literally, in our caucus, either one, could be an LA, could be a communications person, could be a research person, we have no ability now to fill that gap within the framework of our caucus. And I think flexibility at a time like this is pretty important. And this amendment would give both caucuses flexibility. If you lost a communications person, maybe you could backfill in with an LA, and so on and so forth. Right now, we don't believe we have that opportunity. And as such, either caucus could find themselves stymied to a great respect in a certain area by the inability of us to have any flexibility. So, Mr. President, I stand in support of this amendment. I think it's a thoughtful amendment. It's a good amendment. It's something we ought to try, and I think it's some flexibility that both caucuses could well use as we move through this difficult time.
Senator Hand.
And, Mr. President, and maybe members don't know this, but this information is available. I believe it's public information. It has to do with the cost of the caucuses, and if you go out and look at that, the great majority of the cost that we have is for nonpartisan staff. The numbers I have say that it's about 67.5% of the cost is nonpartisan. The cost of the minority caucus staff is 8%. The majority cost is almost 25%. And I think, again, my amendment doesn't necessarily do anything with how that money is. It doesn't talk about what that total amount should be. Right now we've got $18 million being spent on the operations of the Senate. And the majority has every right and power to change that amount to make it more or less as it sees fit. But there's something fundamentally wrong when we do not have the ability to manage the portion of a budget that is fair and proportionate to our membership in ways that the majority does. And that should be changed. And I can think of no good reason why any majority would object to that. It's not at all about taking any right away from the majority, unless the majority has its intent to do some harm to the minority simply because it can. And I don't think that's what Senator Pogamiller, you talked about bipartisan and the spirit of this House, and I think I take you at your word for that. And this is an amendment that speaks to that.
Secretary, we'll take the roll on the amendment. All senators having voted desire to vote. Secretary, close the roll. Are we in 22 ayes, 42 nays? The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. I'd like to offer the A27 amendment.
Senate Secretary will report the Ingebrigtsen A27.
A27, yes.
A27 amendment.
Senator Ingebrigtsen moves to amend Senate Resolution Number 65 as follows. Page 24, line 31, strike 30 and insert 7. This is the A27 amendment.
Senator Ingebrigtsen on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. In our pink manual that we were issued when we came here to this body, we have a code of ethics and rules, and the part that I'm talking about is Section 55. However, I'd like to quote Section 56.1 if I could, and it says, members shall adhere to the highest standard of ethical conduct as embodied in the Minnesota Constitution, state law, and these rules. Members, what I'm talking about is we are held at a higher standard. I don't think anybody in this room is going to argue with that. But the rule that I am attempting to change here, I think, seems to make a lot of good sense, and that's Rule 55.4 on that in our manual. And that's basically to hurry the process up. Folks, if we're accused, and Mr. President, I think you're the chair of this subcommittee, and I'm on this particular committee, and I don't think we have anything before us right now, so there is nothing pending. Let me make that very clear. But when we are accused, either wrongfully or otherwise, by public or another member in this body or wherever, however things come to the Committee of Ethics, one thing that we really want to have here, it seems to me, is we want to get this moved forward very quickly. And right now what's set in our policy is we have a 30-day opportunity to actually basically drag our feet before we before we actually have a probable cause hearing. A probable cause is just basically to find out whether we proceed with something, and it says it very clearly. And what can be determined there is that there is no probable cause, or that there is a vote to defer action, or to proceed with the investigation. Mr. Chair and members, in the criminal code acts a lot quicker than this, and I'm not saying that this they are going to be dealing with criminal actions here, but we are under the watchful eye of the public, the media that's watching over some accusations that are brought forward, and I think it's only prudent that this body, at least I can certainly speak for myself, if I'm accused of something, I want to get this thing done and over with real quickly. I've been of the mind that if you've got nothing to hide, let's move it along, let's do it right away and get it over with. I think the public expects that higher standard from us, and I think this is reasonable. I think 7 days versus 30 days just on a probable cause to see it move forward. And that's all this is. This is not making a determination whether you're guilty of the accusation. It's just simply a probable cause thing, and it can either move it forward or put it to bed in a timely fashion. And I think everybody in this body would like to see that. So I certainly I would hope that I would get some support on this and change that from 30 days to 7 days. Thank you.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogabeller.
Mr. President, I think this has worked pretty well over the years. Senator Ingebrigtsen, I think it's a question of getting it right versus going quickly. And 30 days doesn't seem too unreasonable to me. I've not served on the committee, and I guess I'm looking to – you're the chair, I believe. Is 30 days too much enough? Or
personally, I think it works the way it gives enough time. I
think I would oppose the amendment at this time.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you. Just one more comment, and I appreciate that that it has worked in the past. It's just that members, this is going to the public perception is huge here, and it's going to work better, I think. And again, we're only talking about whether the case actually moves forward or not. So I think it's a fair request. I would like to be able to tell the public that if we're going to be accused of something, we're actually going to take care of it real quickly and not stretch it out. And I think 30 days over 7 is a long stretch. So, again, I would ask for your support.
On the Ingebrigtsen motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion does not prevail. Further discussion? Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to offer the A52, please.
Secretary will report the Michelle A52 amendment.
Senator Michelle moves to amend Senate Resolution number 65 as follows. Page 23 after line 22, insert. This is amendment A52.
Senator Michelle, on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, we need to get our work done on time. That's the principle behind this suggested amendment. We have cities and school districts and counties waiting for our budget. And so what this language would do, members, is if we don't get a budget done on time this year, if we don't get a budget done on time by May 18th, then members would not be eligible for any per diem in a special session that was called for purposes of passing a budget. So this would not impact members, a special session called for the floods or a tornado or some kind of natural disaster. This is particular to us passing a budget and passing it on time. Again, members, we've had plenty of time to get this done. If we go into overtime, we should not be making things worse. If we go into overtime, we should be a part of the solution and start to reduce legislative branch costs. So, Mr. President, I'd ask for a roll call vote and for your support.
Further discussion on Michelle's amendment. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I would oppose the motion. Our intent and our committee deadlines do ensure that we will get bills to the governor's desk in a timely fashion. And We have no way of guaranteeing that the governor will choose to sign the bills, but we hope that he will. And I just want to remind members that you have the ability to not accept money for per diem. I certainly hope if you're not actively working on the bills, you do not accept per diem. But if you're one of the committee members actively working on the bills, I don't think there's anything wrong with you connecting and asking for per diem. But I hope those of you not working on bills, perhaps at, you know, other jobs and things, I would hope you wouldn't. You know, I can't prevent you from trying to collect per diem, but I would hope that you would use your good judgment.
Senator Michelle.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I appreciate Mr. Senator Pogemiller's perspective. I certainly hope he's optimistic that we're going to get done on time. But Mr. President, you many of us will recall some hot summer days in May and June just a few years ago, 2005, and what the dynamic that has happened in this body in other special sessions is that most of us don't have a lot of work to do. That this we are waiting. We are waiting for the leadership discussions and negotiations. So we come into session and we recess, and maybe we caucus, and then we adjourn for three more days. Then we come back and we hear and we wait for more updates from these leadership negotiations. Mr. President, we have known we've had a multi-billion dollar budget deficit since the November forecast. Let's be part of the solution here.
Secretary will take the roll. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think this is a good incentive, Senator Michelle. I think that it's something that we can all use, because we know that we can start working together earlier. We can work with the governor earlier and with the other body earlier and try and work these issues out well ahead of time, well ahead of our May 18th deadline. And there's no reason that we wait so long toward the end of session to try and understand what the needs of the other bodies of our lawmaking process are asking for and working toward compromise. And I think that we need incentives sometimes. A financial incentive for us is one of the things that this is really a disincentive. I mean, if we go into overtime and we can't collect per diem, it's a disincentive for us to go into overtime. And right now, that's what this body and quite frankly, the other body could use as well. And I think the public would really appreciate it. And so I hope you join me in supporting this.
Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Michelle, this is a great amendment because it gets right to the heart of the matter. In discussing this issue with constituents at home, you know, they kind of think we're here and we like to stay here in special session just to get per diem. Now, that's not true for most of us because it might cost more to be here than back at work. But I think the perception is that way, and I think this clears that up, and I think it does provide an incentive to get this done. So I think this is a good amendment, and I think we should vote for it.
We'll take the roll on the amendment. All senators having voted desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. 23 ayes, 38 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion, Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A54 amendment.
Secretary will report the Gerlach A54 amendment.
Senator Gerlach moves to amend Senate Resolution Number 65 as follows, page 20, line 20. This is Amendment A54.
Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. Before I forget, Mr. President, I'd like to request a roll call.
Senator Gerlach.
Well, members, a few moments ago I had an amendment where I was seeking bipartisan participation in the rules for our conference committees. And Senator Pogermiller raised a couple of concerns, one of them being that, his statement about him selecting members alone sent some shudders down some of our spines, so we'll admit that. And I don't want to abandon the concept, however, because, Senator Pogermiller, I'm going to take you at your words. When you said early in this debate, we are looking for bipartisan work in the committees. So, members, the A54 amendment simply states, notwithstanding any provision in Rule 46.2, at least one member of each conference committee shall be a member of the minority group. So when the subcommittee on committees or the meets to put the members on conference committees, one of those members needs to be a minority party member. I don't think that's unreasonable, and I think that that puts into rule what Senator Pogermiller stated he was looking for. If we don't do that, I think we leave it up to the whims and desires of individuals, and we should be governed by rules. That's what today's debate is all about being governed by rules. On the notion about how members vote on particular bills, I would just simply say that, you know, there is no existing rule, nor has there been to anybody's memory that I recall, that says that you need to or you are required to vote a particular way in order to serve on a conference committee. There is no existing rule that says you can't serve if you voted no. There's no rule that says you must if you vote yes or anything to the or anything along those lines. It's left up to to that committee that selects those members. And I think what we want is we want bipartisan participation. Regardless of how you vote, it doesn't mean that you're disenfranchised for the rest of the legislative process on particular bills. So, members, this is a compromise. I've watered this down. We're not asking for the minority leader to be able to appoint. We're asking for minority representation in all the conference committees.
Secretary will take the roll on the amendment. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There be 24 ayes, 37 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion. Senator Vanderveer.
Mr. President, I have the A51 amendment.
Secretary will report the Vanderveer A51 amendment.
Senator Vanderveer moves to amend Senate Resolution Number 65 as follows, page 3 after line 17, insert. This is Amendment A51.
Senator Vanderveer, discussion on your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, I'm kind of hurt here a little bit after watching what happened to the proportional resources for the caucuses. I think all that talk about bipartisanship, it kind of makes me question it. And I'm just wondering, why that wouldn't have been a reasonable thing to do. It's very hard for me to understand. But the A51 amendment deals with when there are resolutions relating to members' compensation, that right now they're sent to the Rules Committee without debate. This resolution, members, would let us discuss our own compensation here on the floor without having it shrouded in secrecy or protected by the Rules Committee. It would let us have that debate openly in front of the public without asking permission of a small group. So, members, I think this, I know a lot of you wanted to vote on the per diem issue last year when it came up, and weren't able to do so because we couldn't bring that to the floor until very late in the session. So this would just put in our rules that these resolutions would come to the floor. And I would ask for a roll call, Mr. President.
Be a roll call. Any further discussion? Secretary, we'll take, Senator Pogrebiller? Secretary, we'll take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There be 21 ayes, 40 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on the resolution.
Mr. President.
Senator Hand.
Mr. President, I have the A-19 amendment.
Secretary will report the Hand A-19 amendment.
Senator Hand moves to amend Senate Resolution number 65 as follows. Page 23 after line 22, insert. This is amendment A-19.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. This again speaks to Section 53 of the Rules Resolution. And the purpose of this rule is, frankly, to correct what some of us believe is an abusive practice that has been employed by the majority. And simply, the rule change would say that eligibility for or the amount of any payment to a member for any purpose, including compensation, per diem, or expense reimbursements, may not depend upon or vary because of the member's vote on any issue in the Senate or Senate committee. And this is a fundamental issue of fairness. And the reason that I'm bringing this change the rules is because this kind of thing has been done. There have been resolutions brought that say some of the things that the majority has voted on, it's going to depend on maybe some actions. If you are voted against it, then you have to do something other than what everybody else does. And these things are fundamentally, I think, wrong to do that. We vote as a majority. We make decisions as a majority. The decisions we take apply to everyone, in the majority and minority alike. That's the essence of majority rule. To do something that is designed to be punitive or political or in some other way, maybe it's even unconstitutional. But I think that since this practice has been used in this body, I think we ought to adopt a rule to make sure that this does not happen again. And so, again, members, I don't know of any reason why we would want to allow this to go on, and so why we shouldn't vote for my amendment, I'm not sure. But I'd like to ask for a roll call vote.
Further discussion on the A-19 amendment. Senator Pogrebiller.
Mr. President, actually, this amendment is a makes it easier for a member to hide from the voters what their intent is. Because the current procedure in the Senate is that if you vote for the per diem or compensation amount, you get it. If you don't, if you vote to cut it or something else, then all you simply have to do is walk over there and sign a piece of paper to the Secretary of the Senate so they know what number to give you. And if you choose to take the amount, you have the ability to take the amount that you voted against. You just have to sign something that says that you want that amount. Otherwise, there's no way for the office to know what amount you would like. So I would oppose the amendment.
Secretary will take the roll on the amendment. All senators having voted desire to vote, Secretary will close the roll. There being 25 ayes, 38 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion, Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, I would yield to Senator Vanderveer if.
Senator Vanderveer. Right.
Mr. President, I have the A-53 amendment.
Secretary will report the Vanderveer A-53 amendment.
Senator Vanderveer moves to amend Senate Resolution Number 65 as follows. Page 26 after line 20, insert. This is amendment A-53.
Senator Vanderveer.
Mr. President, members, the state is in a fiscal crisis. We are contemplating drastic budget reductions, working very hard to put together a budget for the next session, and we're going to be calling on the people of Minnesota to make a lot of sacrifices, and we already have. And what this amendment does is reduce per diem back to the $66 level that it was at when we were elected. And it does this just through, it's a temporary reduction, does it just through the end of this legislative session, and then it returns to the normal rate. So it is temporary, but I think it's time that we showed leadership and that we showed that we are willing to participate in the pain in balancing this budget. So, and I think we should have a roll call vote on this, Mr. President.
There'll be a roll call. Further discussion on the Gerlach or Vanderveer A-53 amendment.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I would prefer if members would deal with this in resolution like we do, but since we've been voting on this all day, we might as well continue voting on it. Just remind members that each member does have the ability today to take a lesser per diem amount if they choose. And I would encourage members who feel strongly about this issue to do that. I would oppose the amendment.
Mr. President.
Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, Senator Pogemiller, I might agree to that if we made the income tax optional, if we made the sales tax optional, if we made the car tab license fee optional to our constituents. Then I might agree to make a salary reduction or a per diem reduction optional, but I think that argument doesn't really stand up when the only debt you can still go to prison for is failure to pay taxes. So we don't ask people to do this. We don't invite them to participate. We make them do it. And I don't think it's real life for us to say, well, if we want to, we can take less or we can reduce our salary. I think we should treat us the way we treat the rest of the people in the state and pass this amendment.
Secretary will take the roll.
Mr. President.
All senators having voted desire to vote. Secretary, we'll close the roll. Being 10 ayes and 52 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion? Senator Sedgum.
Mr. President, I have the A18 amendment.
Did you say A18?
A18. 1-8.
Senator Sedgum moves to amend Senate Resolution 65 as follows. Page 5, delete lines 24 to 32. Page 6, this is amendment A18.
Senator Sedgum on the A18 amendment.
Mr. President, members, this has to do with the appropriation bills as they're arriving on the floor, and the fact that the rules, at least as suggested, would, for the most part, not allow a lot of, if you will, amending or tinkering. And unless you were privy to being on the Finance Committee, of which 20 of our members are, but 47 aren't, you really don't have a lot of input into this. And so, Mr. President, what this amendment simply allows then, or at least calls for, is that we delete these portions, allowing a member who, as Senator Coring says, I came to vote, let me vote. And as this amendment then provides, we would have an opportunity, individual members, to rise and to offer amendments that we thought were appropriate to appropriation bills. An individual member may think that we ought to spend more or less in a certain category, and moving money from one category to another. That's not allowed under these rules, and I think it puts at a disadvantage 47 of our members who don't have an opportunity because they don't serve on the Finance Committee. It puts those members to a disadvantage. So, Mr. President, I would certainly urge support of this. I think it's the right thing to do. It's what we ought to do. It allows every member of this body to have an equal input into what these appropriation bills look like, and how they, in fact, fall together in the end as we move towards resolution to this session. So, Mr. President and members, urge support and would ask for a roll call.
Yes, for roll call. Mr. President.
There will be a roll call. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I oppose the amendment. I think this language ensures that members on the floor be straightforward and transparent about their choices, and it takes away a lot of the game playing where someone says, I want to spend more money, but I don't want to pay for it. And so I think this is a really good amendment. I think the way the rule is written is really sound. It's fiscally responsible. It provides accountability, and it creates transparency and truth in budgeting. So I would strongly oppose this Sedgum amendment.
Senator Sedgum.
Mr. President, I was looking at, of course you always do, but you look at this language, and as for instance, over the at least the last couple of tax bills, I think, for instance, our caucus has offered amendments which would maybe serve nursing homes a little bit better in the Health and Human Services bill. If we were to offer that amendment, we, as I understand the current language, would not be able to offer that amendment unless we found some corresponding new revenue someplace. The way I read this language, we could not move money around in the Health and Human Services bill to serve nursing homes in one category a little bit better and maybe something else a little bit less. So, I think this really locks our hands in many ways with respect to dealing with these appropriation bills. I think it's important that members have the flexibility to do that, and again, I would urge your support.
Mr. President.
Senator Hand on the A18 Sedgum Amendment.
Members, I support this amendment, and I think Senator Sedgum has got a good point. I think the only reason to have the rule change is just to use another tool to say to the minority, you may not participate in the debate. we in the past, if we may differ with the majority on structures of these omnibus bills, which most of us do not serve on the finance committees and do not have a hand in putting together, and as Senator Sundgren pointed out, we may differ with you on some things, and we say we'd like to spend more money here or less money here, but now you're saying we can't do that. We're not allowed to do that. We have to be quiet. We're not allowed to have an amendment. To me, if the concerns that the majority are raising are legitimate, we can have the amendment, make that argument, and vote against us. You've got the votes. Why not let us have an amendment to make our point? Seems to me that the only object with this rule change is to make sure that we as a minority cannot talk about things that we think are important. We cannot set different priorities. We have no input into the setting of targets under these new rules. And now we have no input in the ability to make amendments to the final budget bills that come to the floor. This is an abuse by the majority. It is unfair, and everyone ought to see this. And we ought to vote for Senator Sundgren's amendment.
Secretary,
we'll Mr. President, just very briefly, that's not what the rule says. Members can offer amendments. They have to be honest amendments. And members of the minority can participate in the deliberations on setting the targets in the committees. That's what the committee work is about. All this amendment says is that when a bill is on the floor, you can't offer an amendment that either spends more money than we have or cuts taxes so that we can't put the budget together. And all this says is as long as you balance those out, you can offer any amendment you want that's germane to the bill. And I think this is the fiscally responsible, accountable, and maintains the integrity of the budget process. So it simply does not do what Senator Han has suggested. It does not close off debate. It allows for debate, and it's an honest debate.
Mr. President, I think that the very fact that we're being described as only being able to offer what the majority leader calls an honest amendment. You know, we have some rules about questioning the intent of other members and what they're doing, and I think that speaks exactly to that. We have now a definition of what an honest amendment is. And members, there's nothing to prevent the majority from voting down every amendment. In fact, they do, as I recall, almost every amendment that the minority brings. If you don't like our amendment, if you think it throws the budget out of balance, if you, whatever reason you want to, you can vote against it. All this is for is to say we don't want the minority to offer amendments that we don't like. And so we're not going to let you do it. And, you know, maybe we ought to just change this whole rule sheet and just strike all the language after line 1.11 and just say the majority gets to do whatever it wants. That's the rule. Why don't we do that? That'd make it a whole lot simpler, and we wouldn't have to have 10 pages or 15 pages. We just say, let the majority do whatever they want. This is an amendment. What Senator Sundgren has raised is to correct an application that says the minority cannot offer an amendment that it decides is an honest amendment. It can only be an amendment that the majority decides meets the criteria of an honest amendment. And, Mr. President, I object.
Secretary will take the roll on the amendment. Senators should be voting. All senators having voted, desire to vote, Secretary will close the roll. Being 21 ayes, 42 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on the resolution. Senator Sundgren.
Mr. President and members, I think that's all the amendments we have today, but what I want to say is I think the minority put forth a dozen or so pretty good amendments, and obviously everyone was rejected, everyone was thought not to be a good amendment by the minority, and the majority, and I think that's unfortunate. I think that as we come forward as individual senators and as we attempt to work together, the fact that not one of our ideas could be accepted, albeit I think most of them good ideas, I think is certainly disappointing. And once again, I think we see the example of the, if you will, the majority rolling over the minority. And we can't go on like this if we're going to have a successful session. We've got to learn to, I think, accept the ideas of the minority with a little bit more graciousness. So, but Mr. President, as we move towards the end of now this bill, I think what we have left in great proportion is the so-called Rule 7. And that is the rule that basically says we're going to throw out all the structure with respect to our budget setting process with respect to targets, and we're going to, in fact, leave in or put into structure something that's terribly ambiguous, terribly arbitrary, and I think certainly does not meet the needs of certainly this body or the people of Minnesota. As we go forward with this new rule with respect to targets, we are basically saying, majority party, put those rules in, put those targets in as you want them at any time that you want them. And I think that's unfortunate. I think it doesn't serve certainly the body any good. It doesn't serve the public any good. As we move forward, again, through the rest of this session and subsequent sessions, in particular subsequent sessions, Mr. President, we're going to find, I think, that the ambiguity and the ambiguous nature of this rule is something that it doesn't serve this body well, or, as I said, the people of Minnesota well. So, again, I would urge a no vote on these rules today. I think, in large respect, they've denied the good ideas of the majority, or pardon me, minority party, and I think, in large part, do not serve the people of Minnesota in the fashion that they deserve to be served. Thank you, Mr.
Senator
President.
Gerlach, did you?
Mr. President, I'd like to request a roll call vote.
Be a roll call. Secretary will take the roll on the resolution. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 44 ayes, 20 nays, the resolution is adopted. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I think we've run a little long, so we will not go on to general orders. Is there any other work at the desk?
No, yes, but without objection, we'll take the Senate bill introductions at this time. There's two changes on page 4. 1971 will go to state and local, and 1972 to Ag, Agriculture and Veterans Committee. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills.
Bill. Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I guess there is one bill on general orders that has a bit of an urgency, so I would move that the Senate, under motions, take up the general orders calendar.
On that motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President,
Senator Porgemiller,
I move the Senate do now resolve itself into a committee of the whole for the purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Porgemiller.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to designate number 41, Senate file 811, and yield to Senator Dill.
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, when this committee do arise, I move that Senate file number 811 be recommended to pass.
Senator Dill, explanation of your bill.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is a bill that facilitates the consolidation of the McLeod West School District into three other districts. And in order to accomplish that task, there's an operating levy or an operating debt that this school district has that must be paid. The bill authorizes the sale of a bond or allows the school district to sell a bond to raise probably close to $3 million. The exact amount will be certified by the Department of Education. And then that debt will be paid by the property taxpayers of the McLeod West School District. Now, in tax committee, I had a discussion and a decision was made to apply that tax against just the excluding the farmland. It was a house, garage, and 1 acre, and then of course all the land in town and so forth. But after discussing this with many individuals both in the district and outside the district, and plus the four superintendents that are involved in this consolidation, and in discussing with Senator Bach and Scully, I've decided to delete the language that was added in tax committee. So I would like to offer the A50 amendment.
We'll report the A50 amendment.
Senator Dill moves to amend Senate File 811 as follows. Page 1, line 18. This is Amendment A50.
Senator Dill on the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members, this amendment simply deletes the language on lines 18, 19, and 20, and that'll bring the bill back to the way it was as it was originally introduced, and the servicing of this debt will then apply against all the property in the school district, including the farmland.
All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Dill.
And Mr. Chairman, that's it.
Any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Senator Dill renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 811 as amended, be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Porgemiller.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee do now rise and report.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Porgemiller.
Mr. President, I move the report of the committee of the whole as kept by the secretary be now adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Announcements of Senate interest. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. President, I rise to a point of personal privilege.
State your point of personal privilege.
Mr. President, I was wondering about some of the events on Thursday evening when we were told that there was going to be a skeleton crew, and then about 9 minutes before we were called back into session, we were told that there was going to be a vote. And I was really actually disturbed by this because the entire day we were assured that there would be no votes. And there wasn't actually an urgency on that bill. We could have dealt with that today and not have delayed it. And 9 minutes, even when we're not going to vote, I hope the majority remembers that the minority is housed across the street, and 9 minutes is certainly not an acceptable amount of time to call us into session and expect us all to get back and hear within that amount of time, particularly when we are going to vote. And I really think that we deserve a better idea of what's going to happen and not a complete U-turn and a complete disregard for whatever we've been told and simply have 9 minutes notice on that. And I hope that someone would certainly address this, whether it be you, Mr. President, or the Majority Leader, because this was unfair, just completely unfair and unnecessary.
Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, on that point, this was a bill that, and we did send out an email, and Commissioner Hansen from the Department of Finance did call my office and Senator Senjum's office. I think he talked to Mr. Wolf. And the request, the executive branch felt that there was a certain amount of urgency on that bill. And since it was a non-controversial bill, we agreed to process it. And Senator Fischbach, I apologize to the members that were not here, but it felt like the right thing to do under the circumstance because there were, the executive branch felt there was some urgency. And so we tried to accommodate the executive branch, and I made it clear on the record that any member that had missed that vote was only because of the U-turn, because we had announced to everybody that we weren't going to be voting in the afternoon. And that's a fair, Senator Fischbach, that's a fair criticism. I apologize for members who missed that vote, but I want to assure you it was a unanimous vote, and it was done in the spirit of trying to cooperate with the executive branch.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. President, I certainly hope this does not happen again. 9 minutes notice is not sufficient. Not everybody was checking their email every minute to get this notice. It was after 5 o'clock, so a lot of the staff was already gone, and I expect a half an hour to 45 minutes notice when we have been waiting for the call of the chair all day. I just find this incredible that we run this Minnesota State Senate like this.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President and Senator Pogermiller, we had a discussion earlier this morning regarding proper notice, public notice, and I think once again we have another example that there was implied agreement that there would be no votes. I guess I'm one who believes in separation of powers. When the governor requests something, that's fine. He can request all he wants. But we have to maintain the integrity of the Senate. And when there's an implied agreement that there would be no votes, there should be no votes. And, of course, I brought up the subject of a three-day notice on behalf of the public. This was Senate business. And 9.5 minutes just simply is not enough for anyone, including us, to participate, let alone the public.
Without objection, Senator Latz and Moi be excused from today's session all day. Senator Rosen from 11 to 11:25. Senator Parasol from 11:50 to 12. Senator Limmer from 1:25 to 1:35. Senator Day from 1:25 to 1:35. Senator Ortman from 11 to 11:40. And Senator Ortman from 12:30 to the end of session. Senator Limmer. Senator Marty.
Mr. President, the Health, Housing, and Family Security Committee will meet at 2:24 in room 15. So you have 15 minutes.
Senator Betzold.
Mr. President, the State Government Budget Division will meet in 10 minutes. The bills that were on the agenda today will be continued to a later date. However, we're going to be taking testimony from people who want to testify on e-licensing issues. Some people came in from out of town to testify, so we have to get their testimony in. But the bills that are scheduled for today will not be heard. We will meet in 10 minutes.
Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, I just want to remind everybody that tonight's the biennial Ranger Party to be held at Mancini's. Tickets through Ticketmaster are no longer available. So if you would like to get your discounted tickets, you can get them at my office. It starts at 6 o'clock at Mancini's. Thank you very much.
Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think Senator Tomasoni is taking advantage of our new scalping law. Aside from that, the Environment and Natural Resources Committee will meet 15 minutes after we adjourn.
Further announcements, Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I move the Senate adjourn to Wednesday, April 1st, 12 noon.
On the motion to adjourn, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senate stands adjourned.